Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's up?
Oh, hey.
Hello.
Sorry, I was considering paying tribute to the Canucks' performance on Saturday and not showing up.
Complete no-show?
Complete no-show.
Yeah.
That was bad.
That was ugly. That was not good.
It was a really bad performance. A troubling performance.
Giving everyone Bruins leading 4-0 at Rogers Arena flashbacks.
Yeah.
That was tough. Not what you want.
The thing is, and we can get into this more in the whiteboard, but I would say that was the rare loss that troubled me more than, they lost or they didn't play well or
yep.
It was a no-show. And look, maybe we're going to see them come out flying tonight and we'll look back on it and say, hey, the team had the flu.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's that simple, but man, that was tough.
Yeah. There's a lot to get into. We're going to talk to Landon Ferraro. He's coming in studio with us again for a whole hour from 12:30 to 1:30. So looking forward to that. It was a blast the last time we did it. We'll do that at 12:30. But of course, there's so much to get into today. So let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
We'll start with the headlines. First of all, it is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, December 16th. And starting with the headlines, and of course, usually the headline in this segment is the result of the most recent game or the fact that it's a game day, and it is a game day. They're playing the Avalanche tonight, and we're looking ahead and we're setting that one up. But I really don't think the headline is the performance. The performance is part of the headline, of course. I just think the headline right now is, it feels like this season might be reaching a tipping point. And part of that is the result, as you said, a legitimately very concerning result on Saturday against the Bruins. But just since we left the air on Friday, here's a little rundown for everyone to get caught up. Since we left the air on Friday, the Canucks laid another egg on home ice. They got pumped 5-1 by the Bruins. Rick Tocchet, after the game, said his team has three or four or five guys struggling to get emotionally invested. Also said that his team almost completely failed to execute on the coaching staff's game plan and that some of the coaches took that personally.
And also that when the team struggles or things don't go their way, they can become individuals, at mm-hmm. least the first power play unit. So that's basically directed at all of his star players.
Yes. President Jim Rutherford goes on after hours, mostly held back.
Restrained.
Not a classic Jim Rutherford flamethrower interview, but does say, look, hey, we need a couple of players to be legitimate contenders.
Well, right?
Says his roster as constructed doesn't have the juice, doesn't have the guys to be legitimate contenders.
Well, and very much like a fussy baby, right? Like, you know, whenever you try to give a fussy baby baby food,
and
they're
do
like,
I ever?
And they turn their head. They were legitimately. It was like Scott Oak reaching into the formula and being like, "Your team's a contender, right, Jim?" And Jim was like, "No, we're a couple players away."
Yeah. So that's still notable. As much as it was a restrained performance from Jim Rutherford, that's still a very notable piece of commentary, I think, from him.
I'm going to let you finish the rundown, okay. And then I want to get into what I really took away from that after hours.
It's called Jim Rutherford a fussy baby.
No, I was making an analogy from the
metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. It was the way that he was like, no. You know what
no,
I mean?
I refuse that.
Well, and because they asked him sort of the question the first time, and he kind of played it down, but a little more politely, and then they read a fan question about it, and he was like, but we're a couple players away from being contenders. It was the insistence.
Yeah.
You know, like he came back to it. He backtracked to make sure that he made the point. Anyway, I was just, doing a metaphor. I'm obviously not comparing Jim Rutherford to a fuzzy baby, Dom. Stop mixing it up.
So
Brad Marchand is the producer today, guys. Mixing it up. Everyone boo him.
Get ready to be radioed.
So on Sunday, Rick Tocchet doubles down at Canucks practice, after Canucks practice, doubles down on his comments post game on Saturday, right? Too many passengers on the team. He reiterates the guys struggling to get emotionally invested. And then on this morning's 32 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman throws out, as he says, as pure speculation, a trade proposal involving the Vancouver Canucks sending Elias Pettersson, who's in his first year of an 8-year, $11.6 million AAV dollar deal, to Buffalo for Dylan Cousins and Bowen Byram. So This was a very eventful weekend for the Canucks, even relative to a season that has already been exceptionally eventful. And I think that context is important, right? I set it up by saying it feels like this season might be reaching a tipping point. If the team hadn't already dealt with so much stuff, so much noise, so much drama this season, I think it would be easier to shrug off a weekend like this. But coming on the heels of all the context and the history before it, it's a lot harder to just shrug it off when there's this much stuff happening, this much noise around the team in such a concentrated period.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the thing is, right, is you can have drama.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something you can't overcome. In fact, that's something Canucks players are pretty used to, right? What I think makes this a little more interesting, right now anyway, is the feeling that the weight, there's a weight on this team when you watch them play. It feels like there's a weight. I've described it earlier in the season as sneering joylessness. I think before we really had a better understanding of exactly some of these moving pieces, and so much has changed even in the 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks since I described it that way. But that sense of joylessness, that sense of flatness, that volatility in performance, right? Like, this Canucks team lost games last year. They had runs, like, months of 500 hockey last year.
Yeah, to end the season.
Right.
They didn't play inspiring hockey down the stretch in the regular season.
No, but they were, but oh, so yes, you're right. I agree with you. But they had a floor.
Sure.
They had a floor.
But it wasn't inspiring hockey.
No,
but
no,
it, was,
no.
It had a floor.
It had a floor. And that's what I'm saying. It's like the floor has fallen out of this group.
Mm-hmm.
There are performances that look nothing like what we saw last season, not because even down the stretch when things weren't necessarily going their way at the rate that it was in the first half, at least this team had a certain level of, like, a competitive baseline. I'm going to call it that, a competitive baseline. There was a work rate that you knew you could take to the bank with this team game in, game out. And right now, I don't know that you do. Right? You think about that 5-1 loss to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You think about the defensive play that they put in against St. Louis, right? How fortunate ultimately that they were to win that game. You think about, you know, like, I don't know that I'd sort the Wild and the Lightning losses recently into that bucket.
No.
But certainly, like, the first period against Columbus.
Yep.
You know, the first period against the Penguins, like, you're seeing somewhat frequently, every second game or so, you turn on the TV, you watch this team play, and you're like, what's going on? This doesn't look right. There's a flatness of spirit in this group. And I think that's why Tockett's commentary.
Yep.
There's 3 or 4 or 5 guys that are struggling to get emotionally invested. Well, we can see that. He's just putting a finger on something we all know.
Mm-hmm.
We've all known. Plain to see. And that's why I think that loss to Boston felt, because I'm not an overreact to a loss guy, but that felt different to me.
Yeah. Again, because of all of the context and because it wasn't the first humiliating loss at home, not even close. How many are we up to now at this point of the season? We're what? December 16th. It's not even Christmas.
They've trailed by 2 goals or more in 10 of 16 home games.
Woof.
Like, I don't know. How else do you contextualize it? Like, that's all you need to know.
The product they're putting in front of their home fans is just consistently disappointing right now. And so I think all of that adding up and you making the point about, we can see guys aren't emotionally invested. We can see that the work ethic, all of that, the floor isn't there compared to last year. I'll pose this question to you. Is untenable too strong a word to describe the situation right now? That's how it feels. And my gut reaction is it probably is, because sometimes it looks and feels that way in the heat of the moment, and then cooler heads prevail, right? Cooler heads take a step back and say, okay, it feels really bad right now. It feels like something is untenable, but there's always a way through. There's always a way out. Let's try to figure it out. But right now, with the information we have available to us, the reporting, what the players are saying, what the coach is saying, all of that, the dynamic of this team feels untenable in the long term. Is that unfair in your estimation?
Well, I hope so. Like, I hope you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong, too.
Yeah, so that's it. That's it. I mean, I'm not going to... I think what you're putting out is fair there. But I'm not there yet. I hope the organization's not there yet. And I think it's incumbent on this group of players to shut us up, to shut up the chatter around them. You know, just like they shut up the, hey, this isn't a core group that's going to contend chatter last year, right? Play well. Play well. Get some wins. Feel good about yourself. You don't have to be best friends to make great music. You don't have to be best friends to do a great radio show. You don't have to be best friends to win games in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
There's a long list. Some of the most exciting Canucks teams in history, right? The 94 team. Those two best players weren't buddies. Trevor Linden and Pavel Bure weren't buddies. They got to within a game of the cup.
Yep.
You know, like, you don't need to get along and sing Kumbaya with your teammates to win hockey games. You don't. So I'm not going to take what's felt like a relatively dysfunctional first 30 games and sort of write this group off. But I do think.
But to be fair, it's not about the 30 games necessarily, right? Because some of this dynamic stuff we're talking about stretches back a lot longer. So I think that's important content. But it didn't prevent it last year.
It didn't prevent it.
That's fair.
It didn't prevent them from winning last year.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like if we look at this team's last 150 games since Tocchet took over, I mean, don't we have to give precedence to the 120 that look pretty good over the 30 that have looked like this?
Yep.
I say yes. I think where my concern level, Jamie, is a little higher is here. It's not the personality conflict. It's that if we're being honest with ourselves and looking at the underlying form of this team, it's been 5 or 6 weeks since this team last played impressive hockey. Like, I think that California road trip, that game against the Kings, and since then, they've won some games. They've had some, like, good hold the fort moment. They've been playing coin flip hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been playing coin flip hockey against mostly drag teams, right? But night in, night out, it's like, the game's decided on a knife's edge because they're not controlling play. They're dining out on, frankly, a pretty fortunate run of shooting luck. Their defensive game has fallen way off. They are way closer to average defensively this season on the whole than they are to elite, the way they were last season. Their ability to generate offensively, they're still getting like inner slot shots at a higher rate than their overall sort of attack. They're still generating zone time at a pretty good clip, right? But not at the elite clip that they managed last year. But they look so toothless offensively. Like that Boston game, man. Like, what scoring chances can you even take home?
It's pretty grim.
I mean, Jeremy Swayman had an easy night. That's a problem. So for me, it's less about the untenability or the personality conflicts or how that's coming out or, you know, even the emotional investment. It's like, for me anyway, I don't even need to go there to express my concern because it's just like this team is fortunate to have stayed afloat over their last 18 games, like dating back to November 6th. They're still like a 600-point percentage team over that. But that, I don't think we should take as being indicative of who they are.
No, and I don't think
they're
anybody...
They're lucky to have been.
I don't think anybody in the fan bases or anybody in the media...
No.
I don't think Jim Rutherford is, right? I think everyone is pretty much... One thing everyone's on the same page about is that the 600-point percentage over whatever span doesn't really speak to the underlying performance.
Well, and you can see it night to night. You can see that they're not... They don't bring the same defensive work rate, so they're more permissive from the inner slot. They're more permissive off the rush. They're taking more chances and surrendering more breakaways. And in a lot of games, teams aren't even taking their chances against them while the Canucks take theirs. It's like the team's last 6 weeks feels like smoke and mirrors, and that to me is a concern because we're entering tonight against the Colorado Avalanche team. Now, the Avalanche are interesting in that the Canucks have played them really well in the past, but have also gotten skated off the sheet against them in the past. So it's like, I feel like we don't often get close games.
Yeah.
I feel like one team comes out and wins.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got this Utah team, and this Utah team is beginning to loom large in my imagination because to this point in the season, I don't think we've really thought about this Canucks team as being like in a playoff race at any point. You know what I mean? We've been like, yeah, you know,
they'll probably be there.
They don't have a ton of cushion, but they're a really good team, and they are. Except that their last 15 games have trended in a direction where I'm pretty quickly or pretty swiftly running out of the benefit of the doubt to give them. You know, like, this team hasn't controlled play well enough across most of their season at this point for me to say, hey, like, I have a lot of faith that they're going to be completely fine. I think they'll be fine. I think they're a good team. I think we should be confident that they're a very good team, even. And they have a chance to be even better than that, right? But at some point, we have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, they have to show it. And they haven't for like a month and a half. So when I think about sort of what this week represents, you've got Colorado. Okay. If Colorado beats you in regulation, you're basically tied in point percentage with them. They're ninth in the West. And then you've got Utah. And then Vegas on the second leg of a back-to-back. And Utah is emerging as this really scary young team with an elite 5-on-5 profile. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10 games. Like, they're running hot. And they have every benchmark that you're looking for like, young upstart team that becomes a real problem over the second half of the season, which we so often see from teams that emerge as, like, every year playoff teams.
Yep.
They've got it. They're hitting all those benchmarks right now. So, you know, the idea we've been talking about, like, the West playoff picture is settled and on and on. I don't know, man. Utah could absolutely upset that apple cart.
Utah is the team that seems poised to have something to say about that.
And at the very least, the Canucks have performed poorly enough over their last stretch of games. And what, they've won, they beat Columbus? If you go back to Minnesota, do they have another win? Yeah, Florida.
The Florida win, which was really, really impressive.
For sure, but... We're now talking about a five-game segment with two wins.
Yeah.
Is that right? Minnesota, Tampa, they lost to... Yeah, so we're talking about two wins in the last five. Okay. They've left the door open enough, I think, that like this week is one where if you don't win a couple of the next three, we're going to go in the new year talking about the Canucks being in a wild card playoff race, not in a Pacific Division race.
Yeah.
So that's the stakes here. And so for me, I'm not getting concerned now, but I want to see how this week plays out because I think we could be in a very different spot in 4 or 5 days, one way or the other. And so I don't want to sort of decide which way to step just yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to beg for time.
When's the roster freeze? The 19th?
19th.
Yeah. So that's 3 days from now, right? You've got this big week. So it tipping point right now might be a little too much.
No, like, I think you're right.
But when they come back from in January, like that's when the rubber hits the road.
I think you're right to say that this is an inflection point week. It's just that I think the inflection point is less about like being in or out on this core and more about if this week goes one way, we're going to know that this team is a safe playoff team and this team can go about figuring out like how do we maximize it. If this week goes a different way, I think we're going to be talking about the Canucks scraping to make the playoffs. And that's still a huge difference. That's not where we expect it to be come Christmas time.
Yeah. Okay, to the broadsheet now. I have a feeling we're going to talk about this a lot later in the show probably as well. But of course, as I mentioned, Elliot Friedman throwing out there as speculation, he said, the idea of the Canucks trading Elias Pettersson for Dylan Cousins and Bowen Byram of the Buffalo Sabres. Now, he went on Donnie and Dolly as well today, and he basically said, look, I think the Canucks and Sabres have talked. He says the Sabres have players the Canucks like, thinks the Sabres would like Elias Pettersson, obviously, which, yeah, no kidding. But also says, you know, they want to have a good player back. They don't want to make their team worse. So he's just kind of putting those pieces together when he throws that trade proposal out there. So, on one level, on the idea of trading Pettersson, I get it. On some level, I do get it, right? Because, you know, frustrating is obviously a wild understatement to describe his play recently and stretching back to last year. I think it's pretty clear that there's something preventing him from playing up to his potential. Some combination of internal, physical, mental, external factors, whatever. There's something going on there. But even if you think it's primarily like an Elias Pettersson problem, a him problem, which is fair, I think it's fair to think that you still have to exhaust every possible option to remove whatever obstacles are blocking him or preventing him from getting up to his peak before you even think about trading Pettersson. And I know I've brought this comparison up before, but it's still the one that looms so large for me. It's the Jack Eichel trade, right? Remember all the sneering and laughing that people did at Eichel and Vegas after they made that deal, right? People were crowing like, oh, Buffalo won the deal. The next year, Vegas missed the playoffs. And for a large stretch of that season, it looked like Buffalo was going to make the playoffs, right? There was all this. People were, you know, having a victory dance and laughing at Jack Eichel and, oh, he's overpaid. You'll never win anything with him making $10 million. He's a bum, doesn't play the game the right way, not a leader, not a winning player. He's a malcontent. Sound familiar? Sound familiar? How'd that work out?
Yeah, no, don't trade elite players. I don't know what to tell you. Like, don't trade elite players for a package of non-elite players, even if they're good players.
Yep.
Like, that you never win that deal. Especially, by the way, not in a league that's increasingly trending. Like, we live in a world where Kirill Kaprizov is straight up having, like, a 1990s NBA player season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where it's like, because the Wild have the guy who's probably going to win the MVP, at least based on the first 30 games, because they have one of the top five or seven players in the world performing at the absolute apex of their powers, they're going to be a real contender in the West. Like, in a world where goaltending average save percentage dips below 900, the top players make an even greater impact on the outcome of games. It's why you're seeing what you're seeing from Quinn Hughes. Like, Quinn Hughes is doing the same thing in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
even though this team's had how many different fires burning at various moments of the season, how many various injuries and absences, and Pettersson struggling, and Miller's out of the lineup for a month, and Hughes is without his defense partner, and the Vezina caliber goaltender has only started two games and hasn't even played that well in those two games, and it's like none of it has mattered to this point because of what Hughes is capable of doing. Like, you can't trade a guy with that sort of ceiling for a couple guys who don't have that sort of ceiling. Here's the last thing I'm going to say about it. One of the core insights that Rutherford and Alvin have brought in constructing this roster is to be all in on this core group, right? The commentary mm-hmm. on Rutherford's first day was, we have some good players and some players we think could be even better than people think. Okay? Through all of it, right? Extending Miller, deciding to trade Bo Horvat, extending Pettersson. This group has remained in on this core. They've doubled down on this core. This core is the foundation of what they've tried to build, which was, you know, this effective like retool as opposed to a rebuild around what they had. This idea that if we could, you know, bring in we need to bring in a really good defender. We need to bring in some really good forwards. We need to bring in some glue guy pieces to elevate what we've got cooking here. But we think we have enough to make a stew out of what we have right now. If that only lasts 18 months and you change direction by trading one of the guys who's in their mid 20s. I mean, to me anyway, that's
you just signed to an 8-year extension.
To me, that's just
earlier this calendar year.
To me, that's a repudiation of the direction that this club has very consciously chosen. And by the way, executed really well to this point, right? Like gotten far more out of this mm-hmm. direction, this narrow path, as we've described it over the years, than I thought possible. To jump off the tightrope halfway, maybe for a narrower tightrope, to me anyway, that's just like, it's like a declaration of indirection.
Trading Pettersson would be like the classic thing, and this applies to any situation in your life, where you're like, uh-oh, this is a mess, I need to do something. Solution X is something. You know what I mean? But it's like, something doesn't have to be good. You might need to do something, but that doesn't mean anything is the right option, that you should consider anything, right? And I think that Pettersson trade would fall into that category.
I know we're short on time, but I'm getting some inbox things that are like, you can't compare Pettersson to Kirill Kaprizov. And it's like, I mean, Pettersson's outscored him a bunch of seasons.
Yep.
That's exactly the tier of player that Pettersson is in, even if it hasn't gone his way this year.
All right, quickly, lineup notes here. Demko is going to start. Lankanen, of course, recovering from the flu, but I believe he'll back up tonight. Forbort not ready to come back in. Desharnais is back in the lineup. Mark Friedman coming out. Mackenzie Blackwood is going to start in net for the Avs. Quick playoff standings update. Uh-oh. As you mentioned, Canucks playoff chances have fallen to 87% per Dom's model. First time below 90% this season. Give us a quick betting odds update here.
Just on that model, the numbers are beginning to weight what this Canucks team has put on tape and, mm-hmm. and on the stats sheet recently more heavily, which is why you're beginning to see their odds soften. This week, I'm telling you, could be a really big one for that particular segment of the whiteboard, which hasn't been our most interesting segment over most of this season. Canucks are home dogs.
Mm-hmm.
1-5 when they're home dogs this season. Plus 130 tonight against the Avalanche, who are minus 155 favorites. Over-under is set at 6. with slightly more steam on the over.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today, man. There is a ton to get into with our next guest, Landon Ferraro, in studio here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.